they'll be talking about some new technologies like 5G and automotive and how those affect the landscape of the processes that we carry out to make electronics and the materials that we use. So that should be pretty exciting. And then, of course, I mean, all of our content at APEX is new. You know, the papers that are in the proceedings all have to be previously unpublished. So that's where you can come to hear all of the newest developments in the industry.
That's my guest, IPC's Brooke Sandy, next on Reliability Matters.
Welcome to Reliability Matters, a podcast for the electronic assembly industry. Each episode covers topics related to reliability, best practices, and environmentally responsible assembly techniques, with insights from experts across the electronic assembly industry. Now, here's your host, Mike Conrad.
Brooke Sandy, welcome to Reliability Matters.
Thanks, Mike.
It's nice to talk to you in your newer role. Usually, when you and I are speaking, we're at a technical conference or a workshop or symposium, and you're talking chemical geek stuff, and I'm talking contamination geek stuff, and now that's changed. You're now with IPC.
Yeah, that's true. I started with IPC in December, and in the role of technical conference program manager. So they newly added a technical lead to the events team. So I oversee planning of the technical parts of APEX Expo, as well as other conferences through the year. The next one that's coming up is the Electronics Materials Forum in November, and then also webinars and different tech ed events throughout the year.
Excellent. So you are now on the other side. You were recruited by whoever was in your position before you, and now you are the one recruiting. So you've gone from the recruited to the recruiter.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, there wasn't someone in this position before. This is a newly created position. They had used a consultant previously to do this kind of a role for APEX, and then, I don't know, other kind of non-technical coordinators to plan these events in the past. But IPC decided to bring someone on board to really focus on content generation and encouraging the industry to present even better content.
Well, kudos to IPC. I think it's a smart idea to have the person responsible for building a technical program for our industry to come from our industry and to have been on the other side, to have been a speaker and to have been a working engineer in the industry. I think that's a very smart move.
Oh, yeah. And it's exciting for me because I loved, I previously worked at Indium Corporation, and I loved the customer interaction aspect of it, going to customers and helping them use soldering products better and helping them improve their process or change to a newer material. And then, of course, I wrote technical papers and presented on various topics at events over the last 10 years. And now I see this as a tremendous opportunity to be the voice of the member and try and encourage a little more appreciation for speakers, as well as coming up with new formats and different, more interactive ways to talk about this content at conferences and really spark some new discussions about things.
That's excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to working with you in your new role. I think I already did once. You I think, was your first official conference, the High Reliability Conference last year?
Yes.
Oh, May of this year. That's right.
I just started before APEX 2019, so that event was already planned. But yeah, the High Reliability Forum in May in Baltimore was my first official event that I had planned it at IPC. And now the Electronics Materials Forum, as I mentioned, in November in Minneapolis is coming up. And then the big one, my first APEX at APEX Expo 2020.
That's the big one, all right. So speaking of APEX 2020, the dates change a little bit from year to year. This coming APEX, the conferences go from the February 1st through February 6th, with the exhibitions going from February 4th through 6th. Once again, they'll be at my favorite venue, the San Diego Convention Center, in beautiful downtown San Diego, or actually right at the marina in San Diego, right across from the exceptionally convenient Gaslamp District, with all sorts of cool restaurants and bars and things that are required to keep engineers engaged.
Yeah, it's an excellent venue. And actually, this year, we're going to be in a different space than you're used to. In previous years, you know, we were on that in that one exhibition hall that was closer to, I don't know, what you'd call it, uptown, or like the Gaslamp District.
Right.
This year, we're switching to the other end of the convention center. So it'll be prepared that you'll be walking into a different room.
Oh, you'll
no. You'll be walking into a different space. But I think in some ways, it'll be even better.
Excellent. It's in the same general vicinity, though, right?
Yeah, it's in the same convention center.
Okay, yeah.
It's just there's like the right side of the convention center where we usually are.
We're going to be on the left side.
And we're going to be on the left side.
Yeah, no big deal. Yeah. No big deal. It's just a longer stagger back to our booth from the Gaslamp District, but that's okay. It's probably going to be good for us, right? A little extra walking won't hurt anybody.
Right. But the show floor is all integrated and in one place. You know, sometimes we've been doing the upstairs. There's also an expo upstairs. Now it'll all be in one place, and the CFX line will be on the show floor. And
oh, that's great. I never enjoyed when any venue had to split up the exhibitors, because you know, one part of the exhibit hall was always the preferred place to be. The other was, you know, considered the outcast, and it was either too hot or too stuffy or too far away or whatever. I love it when everything's all under one roof in one large hall. I think that maximizes the effectiveness of the exhibitors going up and down the aisles.
Oh yeah, definitely. We feel the same way. So we're excited to have a
wonderful,
slightly different space.
Wonderful. Now let's talk about some of the things going on at the show. First of all, I think it's ironic. It is not ironic, but it's interesting that APEX 2020 is, of course, an optical term, and it's used to describe perfect eyesight, perfect vision. So I think there's a lot of tie-ins. That might be a little geeky, but there's a lot of tie-ins with the year 2020 and our industry in 2020, because we are a vision-oriented industry. And when people go to trade shows of any kind, they're looking for vision. They're looking for what's coming around the corner, what's in my future. And the technical conferences deliver that, and to a certain extent, the trade show floor delivers that. But most of the hints of vision of what's coming in the future lands in the technical conferences. And I know that you have a keynote speaker coming up, talk about vision. I've always loved the IPC APEX keynote speakers because I'm a geek in my heart, right? And we've had so many great speakers. We had the Woz, Steve Wozniak.
I remember that one. He was great.
He was great. And any kind of computer geek would love to hear, whether you're a Mac or a PC fan, it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's total respect there. And then William Shatner. Oh my God, William Shatner was there. Captain Kirk was there one year. And, and you know, I'm almost 60 years old, so I grew up with Star Trek when it was running on TV for its few short seasons. And to see him, you know, standing in front of a group of engineers at APEX was absolutely amazing. And then there's been so many other good speakers in between.
Oh yeah. Even last year, the CTO from Tesla, that was a really interesting keynote. Every year when I've been coming to APEX as an attendee, the keynote just has such power to it. I don't know. The speakers are very aspirational. They remind us of the bigger picture of what we do on a daily basis that can maybe sometimes seem tedious, but one of the things that I've always loved working in the electronics industry is when you zoom out, what we do is so cool, and it has such a big impact on our society.
Yeah, exactly. When we get in our business, as you know, we build equipment that we sell to the industry. And in our business, when we get an order, we research the customer, and we have a board in our factory floor that shows what our customers are doing. So, you know, if we sell to Tesla, we show Tesla cars. If we sell to Boeing, we show 777 aircraft or whatever. And that way our employees feel connected to something bigger than just one machine that does one small part of the electronic assembly industry. Because we may not be doing something really cool. When you were at Indium, you know, you're mixing little beads of metal with paste and flux. That and flux, right? That may not, outside of our little geeky world, that may not sound really cool. But when you tell your friends, particularly the civilians that aren't in this industry, you know, what that product goes into, that product is probably in half the things they own, then it's pretty cool what we do in our industry as a collective. We
oh,
are
absolutely.
A really cool industry, not just a bunch of individual nerds doing little nerdy, geeky things. We actually produce pretty much every cool thing on the planet.
Oh, absolutely. When I was working with solder all the time, of course, solder maybe isn't the fanciest material, or it has lots of interesting things from a dork perspective. But if you think of that, we couldn't have any of the electronics that we have now if we didn't have the soldering process.
That's right.
That really puts it into perspective. Like, don't you love your gadgets? Don't you love that you can search things easily on the internet and all of this connectivity that we have and the way that it enables social change and communication and all of these things? But it really comes down, you know, my background is materials. I joke that I'm a materials girl. But you can have all the fun ideas that you want, but if you don't have a way to make it on a large scale and you don't have the materials to make it out of, you just have an idea.
Right. Like, and
you don't have a physical thing without materials.
That's right. And one thing most people outside of our industry don't realize is we are a very small industry in terms of the number of players. And it's been shrinking ever since. I've been in this business for 35 years, and it's a fraction of the size, not in volume of goods produced. Obviously, we're larger today than we were before, but we're doing it with far fewer players. So when someone goes to a trade show, they're pretty much going to meet everybody in the entire space, the electronic manufacturing space, because there's not that many people that produce the goods that produce the goods. And mm-hmm. So it is totally reasonable to assume that if someone goes to a larger conference like this one, anyone who's anyone is going to be there. And it's not, you know, millions of people. It's hundreds.
Thousands.
Hundreds of companies, thousands of people. But it's not that difficult over a course of a week or so to rub shoulders with pretty much everyone you need to rub shoulders with.
And, oh, yeah. And early on, I didn't realize how fancy, I guess, the people were that I was talking to. Like the real... As you're meeting people at the show, they just seem like regular people, just another engineer or something. You don't realize all the time the impact that they've made in the industry. Like right. Some of the people that are around right now are the founders of different technologies that enabled us to have the electronics that we have today. And
right. And they're just
so, it's so
regular
amazing.
Folk.
They're just there talking to you.
That's right. That's right.
Giving you advice.
And speaking of someone who's revolutionary, who we would really love to rub shoulders with, is the keynote speaker, Bert Rutan. Those of you who don't know Bert Rutan, well, I don't know why you wouldn't know Bert Rutan, but he was the inventor and designer of the Voyager spacecraft, not spacecraft, Voyager aircraft, which was the first aircraft to completely navigate the globe, go around the world on a single tank of fuel. So that was several years ago. He also won the X Prize, a $10 million prize, for the world's first privately funded spacecraft. And he actually has a book, and I think his topic of the keynote address is Spaceship One, A New Era in Commercial Space Development. and inspiration for innovation and the new race for space. Well, the one thing he's not good at is titles. That's a very long title. It's not a tease. It's like half the chapter. But he'll be speaking as our keynote speaker at the show. So tell me what you know about that and when that would be.
Oh, yeah. The keynote is always Tuesday morning. I think it's at 8:30, but there are some announcements and awards, an IPC update before he speaks. But it kicks off the whole technical conference. And, you know, Bert's been doing this for such a long time. He's been an icon, you know, since the 90s, and he actually was a keynote speaker at Apex before I was in the industry in 2005. But he's continued to do such cool stuff that we decided to bring him back because he's really an inspirational figure. You talked about vision. He's doing very futuristic things that are quite amazing. You know, he launched the spaceship company in cooperation with
Virgin Galactic. Yeah, he's worked. Yeah, he's worked
in 2004. So talk about a power duo. Those guys must have really interesting conversations over drinks.
Lots of drinks, I assume, knowing Richard Branson.
But I mean, talk about someone to aspire to want to be like. This guy's been changing the game over and over and over for decades. So I really look forward to seeing his talk.
Yeah, me too.
He is going to be talking about private companies that want to go to space. I know that going to Mars and different things like that have been a hot topic for years, but especially it's been in the news lately with the revival of USA's plans to go to the moon as a first step to figuring out how to get people to Mars. So talk about a timely topic.
Yeah, I imagine maybe a couple decades from now, whoever is doing this podcast with whoever is in your position, they'll be saying, "What'd you do last night?" "Well, I don't know. We wanted to go up into space, but my wife said, oh, we were just there. I don't know. So we just took a spin around the world. Our kids were on Mars for the weekend, and we expect them back tomorrow." I mean, it's going to be maybe not 20 years from now, but certainly at some point it's going to be very routine. It's like, what do you want to do? I don't know. You know, let's go to Pluto. It's too cold this time of year. Whatever. It's just going to be a little bit more routine. And, you know, we've been promised that since I was a kid. And I remember looking at, you know, Popular Science and Popular Mechanics magazines. And you know, we were supposed to, by the year 1990, we were supposed to have flying cars. I remember watching the Jetsons and we had flying cars, you know, back in the 60s. And that hasn't been delivered yet. But I do think we are on the edge of that. And it's just going to explode. And I shouldn't say that term when I'm talking about rockets, because that does happen. But it's going to be a revolution of technology.
It's fun to dream about. It's so much different now that it's close to being a reality, or it feels almost tangible. I mean, that we do have flying cars, they're just not common practice. And, in the last month with this guy flying on a jetpack.
Yeah, across the English Channel.
Across the English Channel, that was a big deal.
That was a big deal.
It's really cool.
Absolutely.
Stuff. People flying up to, you know, the upper atmosphere and parachuting down, or wasn't that just a couple years ago?
Yeah, Red Bull sent a giant balloon up and into space, and he jumped out of it just before he went to zero gravity. He jumped out and came back to Earth. You know, it's funny.
Yeah, we look at Tesla putting a car up into orbit.
A roadster with a mannequin. Yeah.
Playing a David Bowie Space Odyssey.
Yeah. And Elon Musk is drilling holes all over Los Angeles, with his Boring Company. Not a great name, but I understand the pun. With the Boring Company.
I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, just not quite sure what he's after. And I heard interviews with him. And he's like, we're not quite sure. We're just getting a bunch of permits to drill holes. Nobody really cares. They're just drilling holes everywhere. So these people come off, you know, like the guy with the jetpack over the English Channel. They come off as a little bit crazy. But I imagine the Wright brothers were considered crazy in their day. And I imagine, Henry Ford was probably considered a little crazy in his day. You know, a car in every garage. And Bell and Edison were probably considered crazy in their days. And Burt Rutan, I'm would assume when he said, I'm going to design this airplane and go around the world. One is why, and the other is you're crazy. But that leads to other developments. And now he and Branson are working together. Musk is, building spaceships and doing contract work with NASA. Other companies are doing the same things. It starts with crazy, and it ends up becoming more mainstream once the crazy people prove out their theory.
Of course. Well, one of my favorite mottos is far out is not far enough.
Yeah,
and I'm
right.
Sure these guys think the same kind of way, because you have to have big dreams and big ideas to make any of this a reality. And it's starting from these lofty aspirations. Like you mentioned Star Trek earlier. Imagine if we didn't have Star Trek and some of the technologies that they had proposed, that were so futuristic and weird sounding.
Well, if we didn't have Star Trek,
we would be now. We wouldn't have tablets the way that we have them.
We wouldn't have flip phones.
Tricorders.
Right. The flip phone was a tricorder, right? I read a book once about, everything we know today we learned from Star Trek or something to that effect. And whether it was fiction, but it inspired something nonfiction, it's just very interesting. The technologies that were bounced around back in the 60s in a fictional environment had, whether intentionally or unintentionally, had, one little root in reality.
People wanted it so bad.
That's right.
They just started taking the little steps that it takes in that direction, saying, first I need to figure out how to do microelectronics so it can be small enough to fit in your hand. It started in the 70s, right? When a computer was still the size of a room. That's a pretty lofty aspiration, and you just take all these little steps and they add up to you getting there, but it takes a long time and
sure.
All of the different minds that work on these things and make them a reality.
Even today, the chips we're making today were, a result of the space program. We learned all that from the 50th anniversary of the Apollo missions, how much technology was required that did not exist, that was invented, produced, and we still use today. And
exactly.
We couldn't put a computer in a spaceship because computers were the size of your bedroom and they were larger than the spaceship. So, that forced the technology. When there's a will, there's a way. And here we are today. So Burt Rutan will be there and we'll be able to hear his visionary talk. There's another keynote in the Women in Electronics event, Aline Larson, who I understand is a race car driver, but not. When I say race car driver, people think, she turns around a track going 150 miles an hour. Tell me a little bit more about the types of cars she drives. They're not 150 mile an hour race cars. They're way more than
that. No, she is a jet car dragster driver. So these are really fast, short course races where they go more than 300 miles per hour. And, I was driving this morning and thinking about how fast 300 miles per hour would be. Because, I get a little, how often do you really drive even close to 100 miles per hour? And I remember when I lived in Germany for a short time, the big deal for
the Autobahn,
my male friends who, this is when we were 21, they all wanted to drive, 200 kilometers per hour on the Autobahn. That was really fast. But 300 miles per hour is like double that. I can't even imagine it. Dedication and audacity that it must take to drive that and do it over and over again.
A turboprop airplane barely flies 300 miles an hour. So to do that on land, 6 inches above the dirt is incredibly fast.
Oh yeah, they accelerate super quickly, and then when they're done, they have to have parachutes on their cars to slow them down again, because this isn't a track like NASCAR where you're going around in circles. This is how fast can you make this distance? And it's really, really fast.
Right. Yeah, that's a skill set and a certain mindset and a certain amount of insanity in order to do that.
Well, yeah, but just like going to space, imagine the technology that you need to do that and safely and not have your jet engine blow up or your car fly off the road. You know, keeping a car on the road at that speed is also quite challenging
right. From
an aerodynamics perspective.
Right. I've seen videos of dragsters and all of a sudden, you know, they lose control because the front wheels, which is the only part of the car that controls your steering, leave the ground for too long. And when they finally touch back down, your car's going a different direction and it flips and breaks apart and all sorts of nasty things happen. At 300 miles an hour, there's absolutely no room for error.
Yeah, absolutely. And so she works with a team from Florida Tech to design the cars that she races. A lot of her sponsors are from the industry. I think I remember maybe Lockheed Martin is one of the sponsors. There are a few different companies that sponsor her. So my boss, Alicia, was going to one of her races and was like, oh my gosh, I have to talk to this lady. And she's won world titles in jet car racing. But also, she's super interesting for the Women in Electronics Forum because, you know, not many car racers are women. And also, she's in her 50s, which is quite incredible. She has an amazing story. She's even, you can imagine, been in crashes and had to rehabilitate from them, you know, learning how to speak and walk again in one case. Wow. But she's still racing and she's still winning and she's still developing new technologies with her team and her husband to be the best team in this sport. So I'm really excited to hear her message. She's a very aspirational speaker. Like I just, even in the short time talking with her planning this event, I don't know. She's very inspirational. I was just like, wow. Like, if she can do this, you know, anyone can do anything they put their mind to. So.
Right. No, it sounds like a lot of takeaways from that. So she'll be speaking during one of the four networking events. She'll be speaking at the Women in Electronics networking event. There are three other networking events. You want to tell me about those?
Yeah. So we're bringing back Trivia Night, which is pretty exciting. I know it was very well received last year, and people will have to contend to take away the championship from the Rockwell Collins team, which I suppose would now be called the Collins Aerospace team. They were quite a team last year of heavy hitters, you know, Dave Hillman and Doug Pauls and
I can only imagine.
Dave Adams, you know, all the usual suspects. I think even Bev Christian had popped in on their team, even though he's not from Collins Aerospace. But they're the title holders at this point, and it's a very fun event. The trivia is not just electronics trivia, but of course we all love science, and it's a fun event to kind of compete and show what you know, and that takes place after the show floor closes on Wednesday evening. So that should be exciting. I know last year it was kind of in conflict with some other events that were happening that evening, so we hoped to separate it so that everyone can come who wants to come.
You can have your cake and play trivia too.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, that sounds like it. I love trivia. We have a local sports bar in our town, and myself and several other people from my company have been trivia champions there many times. Let me tell you, many times. So
it's a fun thing to do. It's a little competitive.
It's very
competitive. Show off your smarts.
It's very competitive. And we spend half our time looking for the cheaters, picking up their phones. You know, we take this seriously, right? So maybe give Collins a run for their money. We'll see what happens.
Well, we've got to form some strong teams.
Yeah, that's for sure. They are powerhouse players, for sure.
Powerhouse, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Now, if we were just talking about standards, they might always win. But
well, that's true.
Talking about other stuff.
Yeah, let's get in the real world. Let's get in the real world and see if they stand a chance, right? So
I know at IPC, we're already strategizing to form a pretty heavy hitter team. I don't think IPC members played last year, but we will have a team this year.
Well, good. You should. So there's a first-timers event as well. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the first-timers event is an event we have every year, and it takes place, I believe, the Monday evening. And this is for people who it's their first time to Apex. It gives you lots of cool tips and pointers so that you can make the most out of your first Apex. We definitely want to welcome people that are new to the industry and new to the show, and so make sure you don't miss that. Then also, there's the international reception. I think that takes place at the same time. I really should have my schedule up, shouldn't I?
I have it here. Well, I have the outline of it here. So I know there's an international reception.
The international reception is a way for us to welcome people that come from other countries to visit this show. It's usually a pretty lively event as well. So make sure you put a little time in your schedule to come to those events. Networking is a huge reason why people come to Apex. I think the reason that people come to Apex falls into kind of three categories. There's the educational part of it, coming to the technical conference and the PD courses, just to
PD being
level
professional
up your
development.
Knowledge base.
Professional development courses, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then there are the people that come for networking to meet with people that they only email with, so you can have those face-to-face discussions and deepen those relationships. It's a really big part of why I love Apex. And then there's the exhibition hall show floor, where you can check out the latest equipment and products from the industry and talk to very knowledgeable people in detail about these new products that might make your life easier at your company.
Sure. You can actually kick the tires, compare company to company, see things side by side, and compare the hype to the reality in many cases. I spent a lot of my career over the last 34 years on a show floor, and there's a lot of information to be had. There's a lot of comparisons to be made. Everyone on a show floor is pretty equal, so you're not hiding behind anything. There's machine A, machine B, machine C within one rooftop. So it is a chance to see what's out there in real time and actually touch and feel it and talk to the people behind it. So
yeah, you get a different perspective going and seeing the equipment being demoed live on the show floor, as opposed to looking at different websites from different companies.
Right. Where the photographs were, everything was photographed by professionals. The lighting was perfect. Everything looks nice and shiny. The shadows are in the right place. It's like car ads versus the car in the showroom.
You got to test drive it.
You absolutely have to test drive it. Exactly. Now, the big draw is the technical conference and professional development courses. That's where we can hear things that maybe are visionary, that are around the corner, that are not out yet but will be soon. That's where people can explain how they had a challenge and they found a solution to that challenge. That is connecting problems with solutions in many cases. So how is the conference going? Is it finalized yet? And what would you consider to be some of the highlights of the conference schedule?
Yeah, I'm working on finalizing the conference schedule right now. I think the professional development schedule and the conference schedule will be up on our website at the end of September, early October timeframe. Before I get into the specifics, I just wanted to say one of the cool things that's new this year is another option for registration. So usually for the technical conference, you would register for a full conference pass, which includes all of the days and the proceedings, or a single day pass if you wanted to just come on Tuesday. And then there's also, you know, an all access pass that all that includes some professional development courses also. But this year I am announcing a new way to enjoy the technical conference, which is the single session pass. So this is an inexpensive way. If you want to come to one of the topics in the technical conference, you can purchase the single session pass. Picture it like a movie ticket where you just go to your one showing of the movie, and then you don't have to pay for the whole technical conference if there's just one topic that really speaks to you. We also always have some free sessions that are available even if you just sign up for the exhibit hall, pass. So this is where we really feature new technologies and maybe some industry issues that we're all struggling with. And there are some interaction sessions also. This is interaction with the action part big in capitals. So these are like panel discussions to really tackle some industry issues and bring people up to speed with the latest that these experts are working on.
I'm glad you called them panel discussions. I've seen other in other venues. I've seen them marketed as debates, but there's no one's debating. They're all talking about the same thing. They're singing in harmony. There's no debate going on. I'd love it if there really was a debate. You know, technology A or technology B, or do it this way or do it that way. That would be really cool. But you guys don't do this. But other companies keep talking about debates. I'm like, well, we're not debating. We're all singing off the same hymn sheet here. So,
you know, it's funny that you say that, because we have been tossing around a idea for a format that's like a point counterpoint, more like,
oh, from the old 60 Minutes. Yes.
What I remember from debate team in high school, where maybe you have to pick the pro or the con side, and maybe that's not the side that you personally stand on, but in order to debate something, you have to take the position and carry it through. So for some issues, this is actually an idea that came from our technical team that works on all of the standards and coordinates the standards committees.
The standards committees are debate teams. Some of the best debates are in those meetings.
That's true, but not everyone goes to those meetings. It tends to be your usual suspects that show up in those meetings. And I think opening up some of those discussions to the industry so they can see the really nitty-gritty of what goes on.
Oh, I think that's
a
great idea.
And how those decisions are made behind the scenes. I think that might be an interesting thing. We'll see if it comes together for 2020.
Yeah, that would be great. A true debate where someone agrees to represent two sides of the same of an argument, both with legitimacy and, you know, both have merit. And that's the problem with, you know, any technology is, you know, people become polarized and you know, one is right, one is wrong. Well, when the reality is, like in our world, in our small cleaning world, people say, should we clean or should we not clean? In fact, I just contributed a technical answer to some forum yesterday. And I'm like, well, you know, it really depends. I can make an argument that you shouldn't clean or don't have to clean. And I can make a strong argument that you can clean and should clean. And mm-hmm. It really, you know, I can't tell you should clean a board or not clean a board until I know a whole lot more information about your product and its cost of failure and where it's going and whatever. I think that can be applied to a lot of things. You know, do you coat over unclean boards? Sure, a lot of people do, and they're successful at it. A lot of people are not successful at it. There is a valid argument on both sides. In my little world, and I imagine in the larger electronic assembly space, there are a thousand other conversations that could be had two different ways. So I think that would mm-hmm. be a great idea, and it causes people to think.
Absolutely.
You know, when I was asked that question, you know, should I not clean or should I clean? I didn't give them an answer. I just gave them a lot of things to question. And that answer will cause them to think and come up with the right answer for them. It's not yes or no. It's, well, consider this, consider that, consider these eight things and weigh it, debate it, make a decision.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
well, you know, from being one of my favorite panelists on panel discussions, you know, I started hosting panel discussions a few years ago.
Yes.
Because the technical conference is awesome. The quality of the content is, you know, unparalleled in the industry. But when you have a technical conference format, you only get to hear what the speaker wants to tell you. When I was sitting in the audience, I was always thinking, well, why isn't he talking about this? Or why don't they address this issue? And so I started doing the panel discussions to open that up, to be able to address all of the different facets, even the uncomfortable ones, maybe, for different topics. And I found that to be a very kind of empowering format for discussing these topics, because people can express their different opinions. People in the audience can ask questions and kind of drive the way the conversation goes. And I think everyone ends up having a little bit more fun than they would sitting in a technical session.
Oh, absolutely. And whenever a speaker, you know, and I've done this for a lot of years, you know, when you're done speaking, you know, you go, any questions? Then you have that, you know, 30-second awkward stare down, you know, until somebody finally raises their hand. And by the time someone finally raises the hand and you answer one question, 20 other hands come up and you're out of time. So
When it's one-on-one like that, it feels like you're challenging the speaker who's in a position of authority. So it's not like everyone's on an even playing field. In a panel discussion or a round table, whatever you want to call it, I want to either bring the podium down to audience level or elevate the audience up to podium level so that everyone can discuss this topic. Of course, there are experts that are going to bring their opinions to the table, but the audience participation is almost just as important.
Yeah, I totally agree. I enjoy panel discussions, and they go in directions one doesn't anticipate. As you well know, hosting those, they tend to have a life of their own, and they get traction in a certain direction. And next thing you know, the panelists are all competing to answer the questions, and more audience members are standing up. They're very interactive, much more than a typical Q&A would be at the end of a presentation.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the any exciting, juicy speakers and topics or subject matters that you have your eye on at the upcoming technical session?
Oh, there are so many. There are so many. I couldn't possibly discuss them all. But,
how about new technologies? Anything interesting?
New technologies?
You don't have to say what they are if they're not ready. Are they?
They're definitely... I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. There's definitely new technology stuff being presented at APEX.
Yeah, there are a couple of sessions that I'm really excited about. One is the semi-additive process. We're having a session that'll have technical presentations, and then we're having a panel discussion on this topic. This is the concept of, for your board fabrication, instead of etching away copper in order to make the circuits, the semi-additive process builds onto a thin layer of copper, builds up the circuits. So this is maybe similar if you want to imagine 3D printing, mm-hmm. kind of in that kind of direction, but related to microcircuits or HDI technologies. So that's something that's very new. I don't think we've had sessions that focused on that in the past. We have some special sessions on e-textiles, which, you know, we've had sessions for a couple of years on e-textiles, but that's still a future technology. It's not something you can go and buy at your local sporting goods store right now. So that'll be exciting. And then we have a couple sessions in cooperation with iNEMI, who is, you probably know another organization in the electronics manufacturing world that...
Sure.
Coordinates projects to tackle future issues in the industry.
Is that Grace O'Malley?
Yeah, Grace O'Malley,
yeah.
And other speakers from iNEMI. So they'll be talking about some new technologies like 5G and automotive and how those affect the landscape of the processes that we carry out to make electronics and the materials that we use. So that should be pretty exciting. And then, of course, I mean, all of our content at APEX is new. You know, the papers that are in the proceedings all have to be previously unpublished. So that's where you can come to hear all of the newest developments in the industry.
Right. You're not hearing, hearing recycled goods from 12 shows ago. It's all new.
Actually, one of the topics is about whether recycled tin and solder makes an effect in the performance of different materials, like solder paste. So,
oh, there you go. So we can get recycled.
We're not entirely free of recycling.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
So, I'm really pleased with the variety of topics that came in for this year. And, you know, since I'm from the assembly and soldering side of things, I'm really getting to open my eyes up to the design topics and board fabrication topics that I didn't have time to focus on before. And I'm so interested in the way that those facets of the industry do things as well.
Very good. Any other bits of early information, exclusive information we can get for the show? Or are we going to have to wait until February to see what other things you have up your sleeve?
Oh, well, not February, but like I said, the full schedule should be available. And I recommend looking at the schedule in the app, to be honest with you. We've had an app for the last couple of years, but that's really updated all of the time and gives you the most up-to-date version of the schedule.
And that app's available on the App Store, whether it's iPhone or Android or whatever?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
And actually, just one more exciting addition to the 2020 schedule is that we have the fundamentals track. This is a new thing this year, which is included in the technical conference registration. And there's a little free fee because we're providing lunch with this program. But the fundamentals program is a program that I'm curating the content for. And this is essentially compilation of all of the topics and terminology that I would have liked to know when I came to my first technical conference.
Oh, very good.
When I went to my first technical conferences, it was probably 3 years before I really understood all of the terminology and could really absorb all of the content that's available at the technical conference.
It's like standing on a train platform, jumping on a train that's already moving, right?
I mean, yeah,
you have to run to catch up.
My former boss would say, drinking from the fire hose. There's just so much coming at you.
Right.
You can't possibly absorb it all. So I came up with this concept because there are so many new engineers in our industry. There are people that are newcomers to the APEX event. And I know that people from my generation love to level up quickly, and they want they want the content to be dense, and they'll pick it up quickly, so we'll walk through different facets of electronics manufacturing and cover some of the basic to intermediate level terminology and concepts, just to get people really up to speed before the technical conference happens.
Yeah, that's very good.
These are speakers that are very well known in the industry, experts of the industry, people that I learned from as I was coming up. And I think it'll be really exciting. And of course, panel discussions on hot topics and also on life skills. So if we're getting all of these experts together in one place, I want to ask them what made them successful in their lives. What strategies did they use early on? Sometimes we get so bogged down talking about the technical stuff that you don't realize the remarkable people that you're talking to and what they've been through in their lives that you can learn from.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a really good idea. You know, a colleague of mine a while ago referenced a phrase that I hadn't really heard before, and he referred to what's going on in our industry, the gentrification of our industry, as the silver tsunami. And that is that all the people with the most amount of experience are retiring and not being replaced with, you know, your job is to be the old sage. You know where all the bodies are buried, know where all the process secrets are kept, know the combinations to every technology safe. And they're leaving, and that was putting a greater reliance on receiving quote-unquote expert information from vendors, you know, with a horse in a race, right? And they may not be getting the right information for them. They're just getting the right information for whoever's providing the information. So that's starting to change. I'm starting to see strong evidence of young blood coming into our industry, which I'm very grateful for. People are entering our industry now at a much faster pace than they were in the last 10 years. For the last 10 years, we had more people exiting than entering. And now it seems to, obviously, when someone comes to work and no one's there, you know, we're going to have to start hiring more people. So I think that has started. So I think the timing for a fundamentals course at the show in the conference section is very well timed, because there are a lot of new people coming in. And of course, they have the education. They have their, you know, electrical engineer degrees, or their mechanical engineer degrees, or their chemical engineer degrees, whatever degree that's required for their job. So they have the education, but they certainly have zero experience. And there's a lot of things in our industry that are, I'm sure, most of the things in our industry are not taught at the university level. They're experienced. Okay. And they take what they've learned in school and they apply it in a manner that they're not quite sure how to apply it. So I think the fundamentals course is a wonderful idea.
Oh, yeah. And our industry is so lingo heavy, or there's just so much vocabulary that you don't run into anywhere else. I think that's a big barrier for people when they first start, just to be able to understand what's going on. We talk in acronyms all the time: BGA, BTC,
QFN.
PCBA,
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
It's all of the letters. It's like alphabet soup. How do I wade through that? And, you know, the statistic that I always think of about Silver Tsunami is that about 50% of our members will be retiring in the next 10 years. And not only is that a challenge for the knowledge base or for having enough people to do all these jobs, but it's also, I'm approaching it from the standpoint of, how do I crystallize these people and their expertise and their knowledge of the history of how we got here? You know, how do I connect the young engineers with the really knowledgeable people so we can soak up their knowledge before they're not, you know, not in the office to ask all these questions to? So that's one of the things that I think is really awesome in the job that I'm at. In now is that reach out to me if you are about to retire and you want to leave your legacy in some way. We can talk about ways to do that. I mean, different webinars or online training. I want to make sure that those stories are still around for the future.
That's a great way to wrap this up. How do people get a hold of you, Brooke, if they want to make an appointment to leave some legacy behind, or if they want to get more information on the show and the technical sessions? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes, my email address is brooksandy@ipc.org. My name is spelled funny, so it's brooksandy@ipc.org.
Brooke without an E.
Brooke without an E. I'm named after the brook trout, so I don't have an E because it's a nature kind of brook.
Oh, very good. You and I both are cursed with having to explain the spelling of at least one of our names. You know, you're Brooke without an E, and I'm Conrad with a K. So
exactly.
We spend a lifetime of correcting people.
And I've got the two first names, so people often call me Sandy. And I'm just used to it. It doesn't bother me. But yeah, not only for people that want to leave their legacy, but also for people that want to get involved in speaking or want to speak for the first time, I'm here as a resource to you. I'm happy to collaborate or just give some coaching or run some practice sessions to help out people that want to give their first presentation. I know when I was speaking, it wasn't easy for me to give my first presentation. I was not a natural speaker when I was born. It was something that I definitely had to work on. And I'm here as a resource to our membership or anyone that wants to be a speaker. Let's talk about it and brainstorm some ideas and figure out a way to get the best way to get the content out there in the world.
I'll end with this anecdote on that subject. Several years ago at IPC's high reliability cleaning and coating conference, which occurs every 2 years, there was an attendee who sat in on, you know, the 2 or 3 days of sessions, and she heard some speakers on the subject, on a very specific subject, doesn't matter what it was, and she was inspired, and she went back to her company, which was Johns Hopkins University, Applied Physics Laboratory, and said, I learned we could be doing this type of technology with our customer. I want to do this. And she approached their end user, which was a National Space Agency, and she said, hey, I learned we could do this. We'd like to try this. And they were very hesitant. But she convinced them to run a set of DOEs and put into an experiment form what she had learned at the conference. The tests were successful. They were able to implement a new technology with this space organization and completely change the way these parts were made, and at the same time, markedly increase the reliability of the product. 2 years later, she was a speaker at the event, sharing that experience. So there is a benefit to going to these conferences and learning. And what one implements from the learning experience, then they become the next speaker, and they then inspire the next engineer or person in the room to make further change. So it you know, this system of sharing your knowledge really works, and it makes changes to the industry. We have forever changed the way certain parts are made for, you know, spacecraft because of, you know, one speaker, one listener, and she, you know, went back and paid it forward again. And this process of learning, implementing, sharing really does work. And that really is the exclusive nature of a technical conference.
Absolutely. And I want to hear more from the new engineers in the industry. They have a fresh take on what's going on. They have a fresh perspective and a lot of valid new ideas and questions. So whatever I can do to encourage these people who have a great idea to share it and get it out there, I'm happy to do it. I see it as my service to the industry.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you're servicing our industry in the way you are. I was happy to hear that you landed at IPC in this specific role. And I think IPC and the industry will certainly benefit from that.
Well, thank you, Mike. I really appreciate you inviting me to do this podcast with you.
Well, I've wanted to do this one with you for a while, and I'm glad that it was able to be on this subject. So thanks, Brooke, for spending the last almost hour with me, and I'll look forward to seeing you. If not before, I will certainly see you in San Diego.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Brooke. Well, that's another episode. Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to Reliability Matters on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Reliability Matters and other reliability-based podcasts are available at Circuit Assembly's PCB Chat at pcbchat.com and at Ascendo Reliability at reliability.fm. Thanks for your comments. Please keep them coming. Send comments and episode suggestions to Mike at mikeconrad.com. That's Conrad with a K. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep doing it right.
Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Join us on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month for new episodes of Reliability Matters.